Previously on the Bus Inspectors podcast.
Was this popular with the passengers?
Not for me when I was a little boy, definitely not.
We went behind the scenes as the bus inspectors continue their project to grade the nation's historic fleet.
Pretty much everything from the horse bus up until the Dennis Dart 1990.
We heard how others grade their heritage.
The Railway Heritage Trust worked with Network Rail and Historic England to decide which ones should be saved.
And we learned about the challenges of preserving 21st century buses.
They rely a lot more on computers than ever before.
Much more electronic, much more automatic.
It isn't so much spanners anymore as keyboards.
It's enormous, and we don't have any space.
And in this episode, the vintage buses which are no longer preserved.
People get them into a brilliant state, and then they become too old to look after them.
Where do they go, and what happens to them?
The downstairs is pretty much kitchen, so we've got hot water facilities and stuff, and then the griddle, fryers and all that, a serving hatch.
And the ones that got away completely.
I'm thinking particularly of the first Bristol low-decker, which should never have been scrapped.
Plus, an enduring survivor against all odds.
Bent, still smouldering and smoking, but nonetheless still looking like a bus.
The King Alfred Olympic lives on.
I think they're an asset because they bring history back into the public space.
The sounds, you've got the motion as the passenger, there's your interaction with the conductor.
Seeing and riding on old buses is a great experience.
The UK has around 10,000 historic buses and coaches. Each has cheated the scrapyard and made it to the loving care of a museum, a charity, a preservation group, or even a private collector. But, as every preservationist and museum volunteer will know, that's not the end of the story. Even once they're restored, old buses are costly to store and maintain. And for their continued existence, they rely on interest, dedication, and funding. So is it right to expect they will all live happily ever after?
The biggest single threat is that the owners lose interest or they get too old or die and they can't sustain it, and their relatives, their children, their friends haven't got the wherewithal to carry on with the preservation and maintenance of the vehicles.
Ray Bignall is from the National Association of Road Transport Museums. As he explains, there are many reasons why historic vehicles may fall out of preservation.
Even if you have the willingness to keep going and keep them going for a long time, if you lose your premises, or if indeed the vehicles get to a point where there's a major mechanical failure that could cost thousands of pounds to repair, there is a distinct chance that the owner might just throw up their hands and say, we just can't sustain this any longer.
When interest, motivation and resources run out, what might happen to a preserved bus?
Some may well go for scrap. If there's nobody to take them over.
It's a brutal prospect that has already become a reality for some. But for many others, falling out of preservation results in a new journey on quite a different route.
You pretty much get, a large breakfast inside the breakfast roll. Two of everything.
Louis Richards and his wife Hayley run Royce's Rolls, a cafe on the outskirts of Leicester.
Full English breakfast. We do crusty cobs as well. They're really popular. In Leicester, it's a cob. We don't do rolls or balms or batches. Yeah, we do cobs.
The cafe is housed in a 1981 Bristol VR double-decker bus, which had previously been restored and preserved. Much has changed since its bus rally days.
The Royce's Rolls logo. We've got covers on the wheels as well, so the wheels actually spin round. Like, the kids love that. As you walk into the bus, can you remember on the buses, the Commodore? Do you remember Stan, the old bus driver? We've got a metal cut out of him, so it kind of looks like he's driving it. The downstairs is pretty much kitchen, griddle, fryers and all that, a serving hatch, so you can come up if you wanted takeaway and stuff like that. And then the upstairs, we use the original seats, spun them round, put the tables in the middle. So there's seating upstairs for quite a few, actually. You get at least 20 people up there. Sit in and have some food.
Today, the bus is loved for what it has become. Its name is a tribute to somebody very special in Louis and Hayley's lives.
Royce is our son. He passed away 6 months old. He was born with a rare condition called Coffin Cirrus syndrome. I don't know that much about it. No one really does. It's like that rare. Being in hospital with him, he was in hospital every single day, day and night, for 6 months. I couldn't work, really. We bumped into someone, really nice lady, actually. Her son passed away as well. She started showing me pictures of the boss and I fell in love with it straight away. My wife, she didn't want none of it. She she was trying to talk me out of it, but she wouldn't change it for the world. She absolutely loves it as well. So we love it. Everyone loves it.
The bus cafe represents something positive for the whole community.
Yeah, it's got a nice character about the bus. Just gives it that extra quirk. Do you know what I mean? And there's a history behind the bus as well. Do you know what I mean? Before it was a calf.
The bus was once Devon General 1215, which gave an impressive 22 years in service. By 2003, it was looking for a new home and was rescued by bus driver and preservationist James Pratt.
I sort of like, I fancy a VR. There was plenty of Western National ones because they were still running them in service. But a genuine, proper Torbay or Exeter, Devon General, Bristol VR was very, very rare. I wanted a Torquay one, but I just couldn't find one. And Mark at Western Ground offered me 1215. And so I went and viewed it. Steve Cox went and looked at it mechanically and body-wise. He said, yeah, it's good to go, you know, no major issues. It had recently been MOT'd. And so I thought, yeah, sod it, let's just do it. So I did.
James's interest in the bus came through a long association with the buses of Devon.
My father was a bus driver. And when I was young, 3-4 years of age, Mum would go down to the shops, go shopping and what have you. Dad would be driving the local bus around Torquay and she'd pop me on the back seat while he was going round and round in circles for a couple of hours, and then she'd pick me up a couple of hours later. And then by the time I got to my teenage years, every Saturday it was an Explorer ticket. It was off all over the place, going to and from school on the bus.
When the time came to repaint the VR, authenticity was high on James's agenda. And he also wanted to recreate some of his own memories.
Poppy red. Do it poppy red. It's Devon General. It's got to be a red base. So we went with poppy red and it came back. We had the adverts put on, the Kent's Cavern Model Village advert. A few months later, I had Torex Hire along the front. If you're stood at a bus stop 40 years ago and a Devon General VR is coming towards you, it has to have the two yellow adverts either side of the destination box and the advert underneath the windscreen.
There was also work to restore the bus inside.
I had the interior flooring redone. The inside was autumn gold still anyway. The cab door area and what have you, I had all that redone, cash trays and what have you. And for me personally, detail is quite key. It has to look right, not just externally. If you can do the inside with the correct seat trim, if you can do it correct inside with period stickers, adverts, ticket machine, cash tray equipment, then it just looks right. But I think I had probably one of the most authentic looking vehicles. You could have picked that vehicle up in 2010 and you could have popped it down in 1983, put it on the stand in Exeter bus station, put up 185 Torquay, and it would look exactly the same as all the other buses.
For almost 10 years, James's VR was a common sight across the UK.
She went to that Dudno Festival of Transport two or three times, to other rallies up and down the country, so she was well travelled and she was well seen and she was well loved by the community.
Then came a dilemma. The chance to acquire a second vehicle, a Stagecoach Devon Volvo B6. It was a bus with which James had personal associations.
I drove them when they were brand new, because I used to drive the 12 service between Newton Abbot and Brixham, and that's what they were new for. And so I drove them, and there was about 10 of them stored. So I went up, I had a look, and P701 BTA was sat there. She'd never been refurbished inside. However, she had newer style seat coverings put on a few of the seats. So she was a bit of a hodgepodge. But I looked at her and I thought, that's the first one. And 701 was always known between all of us drivers as probably being the best one.
James's preserved fleet doubled, meaning that so too did the cost and effort involved.
For a short period, I had both vehicles, but it soon became apparent that keeping, storing, maintaining two vehicles was becoming an issue. And I decided it's time to let the VR go. Not something I necessarily really wanted to do, but the Volvo had the connection. So I decided to place an ad online to sell the VR.
Interest was high, and the bus was sold. It quickly passed through a succession of owners, including an operator who briefly put it back into service. Within a year, the bus that James had restored had been converted into a cafe. Several more owners later, it was discovered by Louis and Haley.
It was just sitting on a lorry park, and it had been for 2 years before we got it. So you can imagine not moving at all, lorries coming in and out. It was a state inside.
After much work to bring it back into use as a cafe, the bus has become a much-loved hub for its Leicester community.
So good. Everyone loves it in its own right. They do enjoy the food. There's one old gentleman, he comes pretty much every day, sometimes twice a day. He loves to chat and a little bit of banter, and you know what I mean? It's like a big community we've built around the bus. It's so good.
When a historic bus leaves preservation, the enthusiast community can be critical. But James remains pragmatic about his decision to sell the VR.
I understand the criticism. I do understand it. However, you got to realise that owning a bus is not just about taking it to a rally on a Sunday afternoon. It's about spending the winters cleaning, mopping it out, changing filters or changing alternators. It's about thinking that you've got an MOT ready to go and take it to the MOT and it breaks down on the way with something that could not be seen in advance and what have you. When the insurance bill comes through, it's about wherever it is you're storing it. You see the direct debit go out of your bank each month.
The VR is one of a growing number of heritage buses which have left preservation in recent times to be used as something else. The Clippy in Plymouth is a state-of-the-art kitchen and restaurant housed in a 1950 Leyland PD2. Then there's The Last Stop, a 1952 Bedford MLC, preserved since the 1970s and now in use as a bar. Other bus cafes include a rare former Hanson Dorset Daimler Fleet Line and buses recently converted into glamping pods include a 1966 Bristol Lowdecker in Devon and in Somerset a 1978 Bristol LH. Each is a reminder that preservation doesn't necessarily mean forever.
It means that whilst it's with that particular owner and whilst that particular owner's circumstances dictate, then the future of that vehicle, however long or short, is safe. But we all need to realise and we all need to understand that anything can happen. Never ever go to a bus rally or a bus running day and take that vehicle for granted, because it might not be there next year.
You're listening to the Bus Inspectors Podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Road Transport Museums, a registered charity which represents heritage collections across the UK. The association is running a project to score and grade the nation's historic buses and coaches. And you can hear more in our other podcast episodes at thebusinspectors.com and wherever you found this one. Still to come in this episode, the ones that got away.
There is a fear that they will become extinct.
Once they've gone, they've gone.
There are many reasons why preserved buses don't always live on.
Broken out on an industrial site in Hampshire. Firefighters were called to the blaze at around 1:30 this morning.
Tragedy struck one December night in 2023 when a fire engulfed a storage site containing 8 historic buses. James Freeman, chairman of the Friends of King Alfred Buses, received the call most feared by every preservationist.
At 8:30 in the morning, I was at home and the phone rang, and I knew as soon as I heard the voice that was coming over the other side, he explained that the shed in which our buses were parked had been subsumed into an enormous fire, not of our making, but originating elsewhere, that had swept from building to building to building and had consumed, as far as he knew, the contents of our shed. I literally dropped everything and jumped in the car, and 3/4 of an hour later, I was looking at the scene, and a scene of extraordinary devastation it was.
The vehicles which had been parked inside included 4 Hanson Dorset buses, a significant percentage of the preserved survivors from that fleet. With them had been other privately preserved buses and coaches, and one bus owned by James's group, the unique King Alfred Leyland Olympic.
The rest of the vehicles in our garage, there were 7 other buses and coaches, were completely destroyed, reduced to nothing really. You could see where a bus had been, mainly because of the piles of seat frames. The seat frames did very well in all of this, but nothing much else. Double-decker had 2 lots of seat frames, a single-decker just 1. But in the front of them was the Olympic, bent and still smouldering and smoking, but nonetheless actually still looking like a bus.
By any measure, the Olympic had been a significant survivor. Its story dates back to 1950, when it was delivered to Winchester as Hampshire's first underfloor engine bus.
One of 4, it appears, that were ordered by King Alfred Motor Services. The other 3 turned up as Leyland Titans. So they decided to just to have one of them. But they had one Olympic, and when it arrived in 1950, it was way ahead of the game Hampshire-wise, in that Hanson Dorset had nothing like that, and nor did the local authority company. So it was the first underfloor engine vehicle in the area. And of course, not only that, it was a monocoque construction, so a very unusual vehicle in many ways.
Entering service in the customary 2-tone green and cream livery of King Alfred Motor Services, complete with a golden hologram of the King himself on the sides, the Olympic had several notable characteristics.
It had this enormous 0600 Leyland engine, which meant that it was really rather overpowered, and its use was basically on a city service, which included a solid sort of hill, which it ran up every 30 minutes, and it ran a full service life from 1950 to 1965, so in its own terms, it was fine. But of course, the thing about the HR40 Olympic, the very early Olympics, of which there aren't, were never very many, and there are almost none left, was that they were built to the old-fashioned dimensions. So they were only 27 foot long and 7'6" wide, which made them rather small. Although there are 40 seats in this vehicle, it is very condensed, shall we say.
The Olympic has cheated fate several times. Firstly, once its Winchester days were done.
Most King Alfred buses went to the scrapyard, but in this case, it was traded in, extraordinarily, for a Bedford VAM with Strawn's bus body. And so it ended up with a dealer called Baker West in Farnham. Therefore, it was available for sale. And a chap called Jimmy Glynn from a place called Craig na Spidog, more or less plonk in the middle of the Irish Republic, he bought it, took it back to Ireland, painted it red, and used it as a school bus for quite a number of years, until the mid-70s. And then, ironically, it had a small fire, which put it out of use, and it was dumped in what he referred to when we eventually found him and it as the showroom, which was a field full of rusting relics.
The Olympic's luck was to change again when, far away in its native Winchester, James had a lucky encounter.
A chap sidled up to me and said, I know where the Olympic is, the King Alfred Olympic is. And that was too much, of course, but we had to go and find it. And he put us in touch with a chap called Tony Ledbetter, who was a well-known dealer in the Irish Republic, very well connected in the bus world. And he took us, literally took us, to Craig na Spidog. And there we were, looking at JAA 708. It was love at first sight, no question of not buying it. £1,000 in sterling, as Jimmy Glynn pointed out, secured the deal. And what we acquired was a rusting, really ruinous piece of kit.
Rusty and ruinous it may have been, but the Olympic had come home and was in the right hands for restoration.
It took until 2012, the London Olympics year, so an appropriate date maybe, completely to rebuild the vehicle. And it had a great deal of steel in the structure, although there was a lot of aluminium paneling and things, but the structure was all steel and it was really, really rusty. And of course, all the wood was rotten and the seats were ruined and it was a real mess. And so it had to be comprehensively, piece by piece by piece, rebuilt. And with enormous amounts of inputs from all kinds of people and huge amounts of energy, it did eventually come good. And in 2012, what was revealed was a complete working and pretty looking Leyland Olympic.
Pretty it was. And as James remembers the result, one thing stands out.
It shone. That was the first thing. Inside the vehicle, everything you could see was renewed and was shiny and clean and in good order. The seats were beautifully trimmed, the paint was all done, the lights restored to normal. It was just a tidy looking bus. It was presented in the livery that it first set out in 1950, and it looked the part.
During 2023, the Olympic developed a minor engine fault. In a cruel twist of fate, it was parked in the group's overflow storage area at Penton Musey while a plan was made for its repair. The opportunity never came.
This fire, which had originated 5 o'clock, something like that in the evening, it's thought, some sort of electrical fault, way away from our building, had gradually built up over the evening, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning when the villagers down the lane were woken by the explosions of fuel tanks and things like that, not of our vehicles but of some cars that were in another shed, and looked out of the window and saw this huge orange colour in the sky, and somebody said to themselves, that's not right, and rang the fire brigade. And they arrived just in time to save the very front of our part of the buildings. And the Olympic was parked towards the front of the building. It was the front bus.
despite the devastation which James and his team discovered inside the remains of the building. There was still some hope for the Olympic.
First of all, we looked at it and thought, oh my God, it's a write-off. But we soon took the view that actually there was enough remaining for us to think about a reconstruction. So therefore, we needed the wreck. And our insurance company was absolutely unprepared for that. They were not in the market of letting us have the vehicle. They would give us a settlement for the fire damage, but they were not prepared in any way to let us have the wreck. It's quite normal, I think, in these sorts of accidents for the insurance company to write off the vehicle and then sell the wreck back to the owner. They ruled that out in our case.
As hope itself began to burn out, there came a breakthrough.
The thing that changed everything, really, was our consultation with and assistance received from NARTM, the National Association of Road Transport Museums. And this is where a body that covers the whole of the preservation movement can have quite a significant impact. And it was, in the end, a letter from the president of NARTM to the chairman of the insurance company that dislodged the jam, and all of a sudden we had a settlement, we had agreement to acquire the wreck for a nominal sum and a little bit of compensation as well for goodwill. And all of a sudden we were the proud owners of the bus. Now, I have to tell you that we'd already removed the wreck the week before all this happened, on the basis that having something in your hand is worth any amount of talking about it. So it was, in fact, already residing in our workshops in Winchester by the time agreement had been reached with the insurance company.
A full assessment of the Olympic was carried out. How much had survived the fire?
If you can imagine a bus that isn't quite square, might have been drawn by a child, perhaps, which has practically no roof or roof structure, which has windows and sides, more or less, but no glass, obviously, and nothing much inside, though it has a floor, and it has all the units and things underneath the floor. So the sort of engineering side of it is still there. It is a burnt out wreck. It looks a bit like a bomb site. It's a very, very curious thing to see. But it still has its character, and it still has its Olympic badge on the front, come to that. And you can see how it's not ready to die.
Was it possible the Olympic might cheat its fate again?
What do we do with this wreck? Do we rebuild it, or what do we do? And in November, we decided as trustees that we really had to tackle the reconstruction of our vehicle. We wanted to bring it back to the condition that we'd had it in 2012, or even better. All of a sudden, that's what became our target. We've had an amazing amount of support, one way or another, messages of support at the time of the fire and support ever since. And one of the things we hit upon doing was actually taking the wreck to the Buses Festival at Sywell at the end of the summer last year. That was a suggestion made by Buses magazine themselves. The wreck was put on a low loader and taken up to Sywell, and lots and lots and lots and lots of people looked at it. And that was useful publicity, but it also provided us with quite a lot of inspiration from people who said, well, what about this and how about the other? And this looks like it might be a way forward. And one chap came up to us and said, I'm so keen on all this, here's £1,000, and dropped it into my pocket in £10 notes.
The Olympic has now been dispatched for reconstruction by a carefully chosen specialist in Scotland. And a recent discovery will help the process enormously.
The bus archive and its fine new building alerted us to the fact that in the MCW drawings were 150-odd blueprint drawings, full-size blueprint drawings, of the HR40 home model Leyland Olympic. Exactly our vehicle, drawn 1947-48 in advance of the construction of the first vehicles in 1949, but every detail recorded. So all aspects of the vehicle, both body and chassis, right down to the number of nuts and bolts required, absolutely everything. All these drawings are sitting at the bus archive. So all of a sudden, we don't have a fire wreck, we have a Meccano set.
The Bus Inspector's project to grade the nation's historic buses is all about providing a mechanism to help those with significant vehicles like the Olympic in the future.
If you need to raise money for things, which we are increasingly going to need to do, because the sorts of repairs that we're coming up to are going to get bigger and bigger as vehicles get older and older, then the ability to say that is, as you might say, grade one listed, will make that sort of thing much easier for other people to understand. It's not for us. That's not the problem, isn't internally, it's how other people see us. And if we're using language that other people recognize from other walks of life, looking after buildings or whatever it might be, then we've got a better chance of getting their attention and getting their money.
You can find out more about the reconstruction of the Leyland Olympic and show your support at kingalfredbuses.org.uk and follow the Bus Inspectors project to grade the national collection via our channels on YouTube, Instagram and Facebook and at thebusinspectors.com. As we've heard, the nation's fleet of historic buses and coaches is constantly evolving. And as the old adage goes, you can't save them all. There are many notable vehicles and types whose stories are not told in preservation today. To their admirers, they are the ones that got away.
It's such a great pity that some prototypes were scrapped. I'm thinking particularly of the first Bristol Lodecker, which should never have been scrapped. I'm thinking of STF 90, the Leyland LDFF, which should never have been scrapped. The AEC Regent 4, their underfloor engine double decker, which should never have been scrapped.
Pioneer preservationist Michael Dryhurst.
There aren't enough utility buses in original condition, but where are you going to find a Guide Utility or a Daimler CWH6 today? Once they've gone, they've gone.
Bus Inspector Ray Bignall also mourns the loss of some developmental vehicles.
For example, Ribble bought a fleet of 20 Sentinel single-deckers. They were almost pioneers of underfloor engine vehicle development, which became the norm for the next 15, 20 years. None of those survived. They were taken out of service before the preservation movement really got going. One of their design features was the steering was so heavy that you virtually needed to get the conductor involved on certain turns. They were not perfect vehicles by any means, but they were pioneering nonetheless.
For Simon Gill at the Leicester Transport Heritage Trust, the one that got away has local significance.
From a Leicester perspective, we very much regret that we were never able to acquire an AEC Regent 3 with locally built Brush body. Brush is predominantly known for building railway locomotives, but also at one time built many bus bodies as well, based in Loughborough in Leicestershire. Leicester had a number of brush-bodied vehicles, in particular these AEC Regent 3s in 1948-49. Quite a number of the 1948 batch were sold to Wessex of Bristol for use during the building of a power station on Anglesey. We believe from records produced by the PSV Circle that they were all scrapped at the power station when they'd finished using them. We've always been led to believe that one might survive in a barn in Anglesey. One or two people have looked around when they've been on holiday and never been able to find one, but you never know, one might turn up.
For Anthony Delane Smith, whose own history is bound up in the heritage of his family-run fleet, there's a personal significance to the one that got away.
It was the only new AEC to enter the fleet, which was a Strachan-bodied Regent 3 in 1953. It went on to serve in the fleet for 14 years. It carried a lot of chrome embellishment and really stood out as a classic-looking double-decker. So if you could pick one that got away, that's got to be the one.
To bus preservationists today, it may seem unthinkable that some of these vehicles managed to get away, but Michael Dryhurst understands why.
People didn't have the same appreciation, shall we say, of those vehicles 50, 60, 70 years ago that they would have if they were around today.
For the same reasons, preservationist Claire Fairbrother has concerns about some of today's landmark buses and whether they will be regarded as preservation worthy.
The vehicles I like, there is a fear that they will become extinct. I work for Alexander Dennis now, and obviously I see modern, like, battery electric, we've got fuel cell vehicles. The fuel cell vehicle's so interesting, and all right, it's not an engine, but it's so interesting. And even if that demonstrator is the only one that ever survives, that should really survive because it was poignant.
Transport journalist Maxon Goh grew up in Singapore, where there is no such thing as preservation.
We as a country are generally not really interested in history, and a lot of Singaporeans don't have hobbies, so they don't understand what it's like to have a hobby.
So what survives of Singapore's transport heritage?
There's only two preserved Singapore buses in existence, and they're both abroad.
By contrast, the UK's 10,000 preserved buses and coaches bring a valuable opportunity to connect with the past.
My very first running day in the UK, it was the 40th anniversary of the withdrawal of the RAF buses in London. I remember quite clearly that I was on that bus full of pretty elderly gentlemen, and they were all laughing and chatting, and they say, oh, you know, I remember I went to school on this bus. And because we were going through the countryside, I'm pretty sure it looked exactly the same as it did 40, 50 years ago. And it just made me a bit sad to think that this is something that I will never be able to experience. I will never be able to experience sat on a B10M with an Alexander Strider body going down the road to my school ever again. And that indeed made me feel a bit sad.
There may be some that got away, but our national collection is rich with survivors which tell the story of our bus and coach history. The Bus Inspectors podcast was presented and produced by me, David Shepherd. Our guests were James Freeman, Louis Richards and James Pratt, with appearances from Anthony Delane Smith, Claire Fairbrother, Helen Bolt, James Vickery, Katerina Morainen, Lord Peter Hendy, Maxon Goh, Michael Dryhurst, Ray Bignall, Simon Gill, Stefan Baguette and Tim Headley-Jones. Our thanks go to the Friends of King Alfred Buses and all the staff and customers of Royce's Rolls.
£6, I think it is, for two of everything.
Oh, go on then. Thanks too to all the museums and collections visited by the Bus Inspectors so far. The Bus Inspectors podcast was brought to you by the National Association of Road Transport Museums.